All right, it's time. My favorite hour of the week, hopefully your favorite hour of the week, it is the Bite Me podcast. John Lopez, Captain Scott Null across from me. We got the original crew back together, and it is time for a spirited podcast, I think. A lot of topics to cover, and they all come from you. Well, most all of them come from you guys who are listening to us on this podcast, and certainly plenty to cover, including the little tournament talk. Now, we were something of kind of not down on tournaments, but maybe press pause on tournaments after the freeze. And we talked about, let's get to September, let's get to October, see what we can do. Well, it is here now, and some people are starting to do some tournaments. I was in a little one over the weekend, and we have a big Heroes on the Water tournament, which I think is going to be a fantastic thing. And it's also going to be very cognizant of, the fishery. So we'll get to that. A couple of things real quick, and we'll get started with other topics like best conditions for and advice for night fishing, pre or post front. That is the question. It's always the question. We'll get Captain Scott's advice on that. Wade fishing homework that you maybe want to do before you go wade fishing, especially as we get into the cooler months of the year. Prescription sunglasses, talking to those folks like myself, well, at least myself before LASIK surgery, and people who wear readers, and how does that work, and some of the best advice you can do that way. And on we go. We're going to talk a little bit of Chandelier Islands. We're going to talk about tackle box musts for everyone, but especially newbies. First things first, always like to say this, thank you. And certainly if you are listening to this podcast, hopefully you are subscribed already. If you're not, it's very, very easy to do. Wherever you get your podcasts on Google Podcasts or iTunes or Spotify or virtually anywhere, literally anywhere, you can get a podcast, you can subscribe, and you'll get a notification when we post like you did today if you're a subscriber. Also, the Bite Me group page has been, it's been a monster. A lot of people on there, 6,600 thereabouts, members, friends, our community, as we call it, on the Bite Me group page on Facebook. You can get on there. Great, great stories, great, great links, funny stuff. It's very straightforward. It's unlike a lot of others. We just talk fishing and fun, and that's about it. And we get your questions there. You can direct message Captain Scott, myself. Caleb McCumber's on there. He's not with us today, but you can get with him as well. Send us your questions, your topic suggestions, and we will go from there. Captain Scott, let's get started. We got a big podcast today. I know one thing I do want to say real quick. I had a chance to get out to your place this past weekend, and you got your own little fishery working real, real nice out there. I was very impressed, as I told you, but you also sent some pictures. You got some good stuff going on old Lake Null.
Yeah, the fishing's good.
The fishing's good. It's always good there. It's a captive audience.
It's uncrowded.
Yeah.
But I like that.
You got a good thing going. Hey, the first topic we had is something that I wanted to talk about, and then it also ties in with Heroes on the Water. There are a couple tournaments happening. I was at the Freedom Boat Owners tournament over the weekend, and some questions and topics that I think are going to be very relevant to our listeners came up. The most important one, and I sent this to you when we were talking about it, is don't cull too soon. It's a funny story. I was out there with Norbert, and we were fishing on his Warrior, which is a fantastic boat, obviously. That's what I'm getting as well. I'll be getting it here in about a week or so. And so we're fishing, we're doing our deal. He caught about a 16-inch trout, and he's like, "Yeah, you want to throw it back?" I'm like, "No, let's make sure that, we get everything that we need for the tournament." I think it was three trout and two reds. Then we can cull from the well or wherever, after that. Then I caught a pretty nice trout. It wasn't a record breaker by any stretch, but it was a good tournament trout, about 24 inches, a little under 4 pounds. And then we kind of, slowed down there, caught a couple of redfish, caught another couple of fish, smaller, et cetera. And so we're driving to the weigh-in, and I know you've got stories on this. So we're driving to the weigh-in, and he's like, that was a lot of fun, but I don't know about how we're going to do on this. And because Thursday and Friday, the tournament was out of Port O'Connor. And so Thursday and Friday, they were killing it. I mean, just absolutely killing it. And I didn't have a chance to scout the tournament. He did pretty well on Friday, looking, you know, scouting the tournament a little bit. But we're thinking, man, you know, compared to what people caught and what he caught on Friday and Thursday and Friday, we're like, we'll go have some food, have some laughs, and have a good time. Lo and behold, we get to the weigh-in, and you just never know. That little 3.9, well, I shouldn't say little, but that 3.9-pound trout that I caught was the biggest trout of the tournament, so I won there. And then our stringer, which was not complete, but it was a pretty good stringer, finished fourth-place stringer. That's something that the light bulb went off. I said, you know, this is something that we always do. I always preach, don't, you know, never know what other people are doing. Don't just assume because people caught fish on Thursday and Friday that even if in relatively good conditions that they're going to catch on tournament day. And it came to pass. I mean, that's one of those true tournament truisms that you just have to pay attention to. Don't think that it's a lost cause right away.
Yep. I mean, usually, you know, you have a real good idea that, you've done well, but it's not always it. You know, there's days when you struggle and you pick up a few fish here and there and you think, well, somebody's bound to have whooped us on this.
Yeah.
But everybody could struggle.
Yeah. You
know, usually there's somebody out there that did good. And somewhere along the way, even on the roughest days, if you get into some of the really big redfish tournaments, somebody's got them. Somebody's going to find them most of the time. But these charity tournaments, just for fun, and you just never know.
Right.
I don't know what's out there.
Yeah. And to be fair, the first place stringer was a real solid stringer. I mean, it would have been representative in any tournament, kind of to what you're talking about there. But after that, there were several boats that just drove by the weigh-in on the way home. I mean, they were just like, hey, boys, we didn't catch anything today.
I've had so many friends do that, especially back when we did the kayak tournaments, because you could launch from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the weigh-in was often a pretty good trek from wherever they had launched.
Yeah.
And you'd hear it all the time. Man, I didn't weigh in today, and I would have come in first, or I would have come in second or third or fourth, picked up a check. You know, somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
But, you hear it all the time. Some friends of mine did that this weekend on a redfish tournament, and they were contemplating not weighing in. It was Thomas Barlow and them. And then they did. They weighed in, and lo and behold, they got a check.
Yeah. Yeah. You just never know. So it was a real fun shout out, of course, to, you know, the Boatyard, who was one of the sponsors there, and Chet over at Freedom Boats put on a really good tournament. We cashed a couple checks, so that was good. Which leads to, and this is all my fault, you had mentioned it and it just slipped my mind last week, the Heroes on the Water tournament, just a really, really good deal, and something that I want our listeners to be a part of one way or another, even if you're not fishing. But I know you have some details on that. What can you tell us about the Heroes on the Water?
Yeah, it's in memory of Jim Dolan. He passed away a couple of years ago. He was the founder of Heroes on the Water. And, you know, now Camille works for him. She's in the management staff. And they put on this tournament every year, or this is the second year for it. It actually started September 11th. We were supposed to mention it, and me and you both missed it. But it goes through October 10th. And it's a month-long tournament. Mm-hmm. And it's an online deal. And there's different divisions and different things, different ways, you know, that you can sign up for it, because it's nationwide. So there's different saltwater and freshwater and all that. It's real easy. Go on to heroesonthewater.org, and it's the HAL 2021 Jim Dolan Memorial Kayak Fishing Tournament. They title it Still Living the Dream.
Yeah.
That was Jim's thing all the time. He was retired, and he would ride around the country in his big RV. And him and his wife, and they go to all the different chapters that are scattered all over the country. And this organization helps wounded vets and first responders. And by wounded, it's not necessarily, you know, amputee, it's PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are involved in law enforcement, first responder, or military, and you want to get out and go kayak fishing, we can get you in touch with a local chapter. We've got them scattered all over the country, and they'll get you out on the water and get you into kayak fishing. It's kind of fun.
It's a lot of fun. And a couple things just to note there. It is an online tournament. Yeah, we've done one here on the podcast. And side note, we were contemplating, you know, scheduling one here actually this month. It got a little bit awkward because of, you know, post-freeze and a couple of other things. We still are going to do our own. But Heroes on the Water, it's length of fish because of obviously – you know, you can't weigh what you're weighing, and there's a bunch of really interesting rules. The apps are just off the charts good. If you're a little bit you know, wary or wondering how it works, it works. You just need to be able to click on it a couple of times and click on a couple of things, I should say, and you'll be good to go. It is absolutely well worth your while. To do that. And the website, of course, is Heroes on the Water. That's Heroes with an E, heroesonthewater.org. It's offering alternative therapeutic programs for veterans, as you mentioned, active duty military and first responders and their families, and a really good thing to be a part of. So, yeah, and Camille's involved in that as well now, right?
I was just looking at that page. Mm-hmm. And I accidentally clicked on something here. And,
that's all right. It's all right. It happens.
I've got Jason Austin talking to me here in my ear. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple videos on there. And one of them, the one I accidentally clicked just in, is Jason Austin. He's a good friend of mine. He's got a story that is get your tissue ready.
Yeah. I mean,
his story is unbelievable, and he sits there and just tells his story. I've seen him do it on stage in front of fundraising groups,
mm-hmm.
and his story is Heroes on the Water. I mean, it's amazing. He was sitting in an apartment in Florida and contemplating shooting himself,
mm-hmm.
and I hate to bring things down, but that
yeah, no,
was. That's what it's... He'd gotten blown up over there in the Middle East, and mm-hmm. He had died a couple of times. Mm-hmm. They brought him back, and it's a hair-raising kind of story to listen to. But somebody called him, one of the guys from Heroes on the Water over there in Tampa area, I think it mm-hmm. was, gave him a call, and he answered the phone instead of getting his gun out.
Yeah.
And so he said, well, what the hell, I'll go fishing. And he went out fishing with him. He came home and pawned his gun. And bought a kayak.
Wow.
And, now he works for Heroes on the Water. He's under Camille. He's out there dealing with all the chapters.
Yeah.
He goes around all the chapters and helps out.
That's
just a crazy good story. The video is on that page mm-hmm. for the sign up.
Yeah.
And, click on that video. It'll make you want to reach in your pocket and yeah. send a little bit of money.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of fishing, let's get to some other topics here, Scott. The first one, I hadn't really thought about this as a topic, but there are conditions for night fishing. You know, a lot of people think, the full moon, I'm going to go night fishing. It's as if a lot of people think, well, it's a full moon, we're going to kill them, you know, and that's not the case. Or even, you know, close to a full moon, you know, what, you know, there is a strategy per se. What are some of the things you know, you're looking for? Let's say Scott, you know, that Caleb, you know, invites us out to go night fishing, or Patrick or whomever, Patrick Gardner. What are we looking for?
Same thing that you look for in the daytime. Yep. You want some good water movement. You don't want the biggest thing on night fishing is safety. So mm-hmm. you don't want any crazy weather. You want, you know, some calm, you know, decent weather. You don't want to be out there when, you know, it's always great to fish right before that big front blows in this time of year. But at night fishing, I'd kind of avoid that unless mm-hmm. you're really, really experienced. You only want to fish in an area that you know really well. You know, because most of the night fishing we do like that is wading. So you don't want to be on the shoreline with a whole bunch of drop-offs or any yeah. kind of sketchy stuff. But weather-wise, you know, the typical – when I've done it, I've always wanted to go out there before dark and get there, you know, like the last hour.
Yep.
And be able to check water conditions and look at bait. And you can see more in the daylight, obviously.
Maybe make a little run.
And it might make you change your location a little bit. Have a place in mind, have two or three places in mind, go check them. And then, you know, kick back, eat a sandwich, relax. And then as night time starts falling, get in the water and start waiting.
And go ahead.
Throwing the same lures. I mean, the same lures that you've been throwing during the daytime. Sometimes it works better to throw darker lures, but I don't really think that that matters all that much. As we've talked about it before, you get in a swimming pool, throw a lure in there, get in a swimming pool, turn around, look up at it. It all looks the same.
Yeah.
Do it at night, and it still looks the same. It's still a shadow. I wouldn't throw something that's reflective, like chrome or anything like that. I'd throw a solid color. And if you've got it, throw black. You know, that's always been a go-to. But I don't think it's necessary.
Right. One thing that I think is important, you know, you talk about safety first, and then I'm going to get into a point off of what you just said. It is always good advice, but sometimes things fall through the cracks. Flares, lights, batteries. You can never predict when your boat battery is going to go out. And, you know, Murphy's Law, you know, there you are, you're wade fishing, you catch a mess of fish, you get back on your boat and click, you know, it could be something like that. You have to be able to make sure if you're in a bay, you have a signal for your phone or you have a radio. Obviously check all the batteries, flares,
cell phone.
yeah, exactly. Things like that. Because you know, it never ceases to amaze me. You know, guys get stuck out there and all of a sudden, you know, they're like, okay, now I need to find my stuff. Now, you know, you have to know where your stuff is and make sure it's good to go. Now on the fishing itself, you mentioned something that I think is pretty crucial. Night fishing, whether it's in the winter, which is earlier in the evening, or in the summer, which, you know, it doesn't get dark sometimes until 8:45, 9 PM, get out there about an hour. I would be out there about an hour before, cause you can actually kind of scout some shorelines. You can kind of see where things are looking, on maybe, you know, whatever reef you're going to be, wading or whatever. And the other thing is never go by yourself, on a night wade, and be able to have something reflective, on your body. Just because there are guys that are going to be barreling in, you know, back to the dock. And if they don't see you, you know, the possibilities there, right?
Right. I mean, it's always about safety. With me, I'm way past that, pushing it stage in my life, you know? I mean, I've got a busted wing now. It's driving me nuts. I don't want to get hurt anymore, you know?
And
there's other boats out there at night. There's flounder boats. You know, there's other guys running around out there wade fishing at night also. Be seen, you know, be ready to be seen. A headlamp is a really good idea. I like to carry my old police flashlight. I've got one of the little stingers, and it's damn near bright as a spotlight.
Yeah.
Keep it handy. And if you see a boat or hear a boat and they're approaching you, for safety's sake, you can shine your light at them, but also to let them know that you're there already. Say it's a reef that you want, you know, you're wanting to fish, and another guy wants to fish that same reef. You can flash it and let them know that you're in there. Same way as, you know, I don't know if you've ever duck hunted much, but
a little bit.
That's what we used to do, duck hunting. We'd get set up. We'd hear somebody coming. We'd flash a light at them. Say, "Hey, man, we're already set up over here." Common courtesy is to move on, go find somewhere else. It's another good reason for setting up before it gets dark.
Just don't shoot over their heads. And that's what they do to fishermen sometimes. And you mentioned something that I wanted to kind of get back to. You talk about the lure color and fishing at night. It doesn't matter. I think a lot of our listeners don't really understand that. I've been asked that question a bunch. Well, can they see this, or how is it that you can catch, especially trout, but fish in general? They do this for a living. You've said that often. The bait, it doesn't have to, you know, you don't have to have green lights and all this other stuff. the fish will see your bait, maybe even better in just natural conditions.
Yeah, it's all about silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, looking up, we walk outside with our eyes, and you go, man, it's dark out here. You know, but you stay out there, even with our, you know, less adapted eyes.
Yeah.
And you stay outside for long enough, and all of a sudden you can see pretty good. Yeah. I do a lot of night hunting, you know, for pigs. And if I don't turn the light on and don't mess up my night vision, I'm good. Yeah. You know, I can walk around out there and just, I mean, even on starlight, not even having much of a moon at all. And I can see pretty good after about 30 minutes or so. So imagine an animal out there or fish.
That does it for a living.
Lives out there and doesn't have a flashlight in their pocket. So they're just adjust.
Yeah.
You know, and they're able to see a whole lot better than we can.
Part of this question as well was the pre or post front aspect of it. And this is another one like, you know, kind of incoming tide or outgoing tide, which we've talked about on this podcast. My answer is always yes, maybe to a lesser degree, but pre-front or post-front, he said, should I try night fishing? I just think in general, though, your thoughts on pre-front or post-front, not to set you up for my opinion here, but I often like to see, well, how long is the front? Was there a front before it? Is there a front coming after it? Is there going to be a dead period in between? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, every front's different. Yeah, they all come in a little different angles, different wind directions, different speeds and ferocity. If it looks like it's going to be a really, really strong front and you want to fish it, just be damn sure to note have a way out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the fishing can be awesome, but it can get dangerous real, real quick behind that. I've been out there before and had 40, 50, 60 mile an hour winds.
I have too.
Caleb and I had one that was 54 miles an hour clocked. And that was a daytime tournament, thank goodness. But everything's magnified at night. Just keep that in mind. Yeah. All the sounds, everything gets magnified. You hear a little splash out there at night and it sounds like a big shark's coming.
Yeah.
But your mind starts playing with you. So weather is also magnified. You know, you get out there and what would be a okay day, you know, it's rough, but we can make it back.
Yeah.
You're in the daytime. You get that at night with a little fog, a little drizzle, and things can get sketchy pretty quick.
And your mind starts to race and you maybe make decisions that are different than you would otherwise.
Easy to make.
Absolutely. And one more thing before we move on here. I've done this, so I'm not like passing judgment because I've done this a lot. I'm looking at my phone or whatever, radar, and I'm thinking, okay, well, that front probably won't get here about another 45 minutes. And, you know, it's at least 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, 15 minutes later, you know, it's on top of you and you're barreling out. The assumptions you make, they better be pretty well calculated and keep looking at that radar. I'm talking like every 10 minutes because things back build and build from the water that you're on, et cetera. So don't make any assumptions about, yeah, it's moved this much in an hour, so it'll be another hour before it gets here. That's not necessarily the case.
It's a good rule of thumb to play with. You know, and watch it on your screen and go, okay, it's moved that much in an hour, it moved that much in 2 hours.
Yeah.
I'm about two finger widths away from this front. It moved a finger width in an hour. That's all fine and good. But when fronts get close to our coast, they do weird things.
Yeah, they do.
If you see that front line and those storms make a bow, if it's like a straight line front and it's coming on down, and all of a sudden the park coming to you bows out ahead of the rest of it, that means it's speeding up and it's fixing to get really, really bad. That's when Dean looked up and he and I are out in that tournament. Yeah. And he said, there sure is some funny looking clouds.
Yeah, you think?
That was what happened on that one.
By the way, he told me that story when I went fishing with him a while back, I think in July. It was a lot worse than you've laid it out. It sounded like it was
sketchy. It was real, real sketchy. I mean, we bailed out and we're holding on to our kayaks by the ropes.
Yeah.
And storing our stuff because we saw lightning in it. You know, we know this is going to get a lot worse than what they said. We get our poles down, get everything set, get our rain jackets on, and we tied our rope to our kayaks around our waist. We're standing in like thigh deep water, knee to thigh deep. And I swear to you, when that thing hit, the kayak was bouncing on top of the water. It was like a kite. It wasn't just floating and pulling. It was flying up off the water.
Yeah.
It was levitating. And it was pretty spooky.
I had one. I don't know if I've told the story or not, maybe, but, and it's always, it ties back with our first topic, you know, tournaments. It always is like, okay, well, it's tournament. I'm going to go out no matter what. It's windy, blah, blah, blah. Yep. And so I was in Sabine and I was, you know, it kind of not in nowhere, you know, no man's land, because you can always get somewhere, but I was away from most of the houses on that south side, or, you know, up the river or whatever. And one just popped up like that. And I'm thinking, you know, typical mistake. I got it. I'm going to get out of here in about a half hour. Man, 10 minutes later, it was on me and I was barreling to the nearest house. No one was home. So I kind of, you know, just, you know, snuck into their little boat, you know, cover, their little boat launch, started tying ropes with the wind direction that was coming. Well, of course, when the storm gets there, the wind flips around and starts blowing the other direction. So my boat's just banging against this poor person's dock, and I'm pulling on the other side, and waves are everywhere. You got to be ready for that. No question about it.
I call it tournament stupid.
That's exactly what it is. Bragging rights. I mean,
some of them that you fish are, you know, big money, but what's it really worth?
Yeah.
You know? I've told the story before about the one in Matagorda. When we got back to the dock, we had a bad, bad day. I mean, it was rougher than hell, and we damn near sunk our boat. And we get back there, and they're putting body bags on the dock. That'll let you know real quick how bad things got.
Those aren't for us, are they? Because we're here.
Well, they were full.
Oh, God.
They were putting bodies up on the dock.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what wildlife was.
Yeah.
They weren't tournament guys. It was just some other guys that were out fishing that day.
Yeah.
But that'll tell you how dangerous that day was.
No question.
I think there was three different boats that capsized.
Oh.
It's not worth it, boys.
No.
you can fish another day, you know, fish another tournament, fish on a different time.
Yeah. All right. So this is a combination of two questions. I think this was sent to you, and it's a long question, so I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But a podcast listener in Alberta, Canada, which, you know, shout out to one of our listeners in Alberta, Canada. We've had some from Argentina. We've had some from, you know, obviously all around the coast. But we had one in somewhere in Africa. I mean, it's just kind of cool the way the podcast footprint is kind of all over the place. A lot in Alaska, a lot in the Northwest, because things that we're talking about can translate to pretty much any body of water. But anyway, his question was about wade fishing and then prescription sunglasses for the water. Kind of a two part there. But what he was talking about, yeah, it was long. So I'm gonna abbreviate it. But we don't mind the long questions because it was very detailed and it was good. But basically, he said he's binged the podcast. He's been out in Canada. He's going to be coming back down here. And obviously, that's not someplace you know, he hadn't been coming every weekend. So he was looking like, hey, man, wherever, Matagorda, Baffin, Palacios, Port O'Connor, you tell me, is there an easy place? And he was speaking specifically to his own situation. But I think it's something that can translate to all our listeners to be able to find an easy wade. And some of the homework that you have to do on that. What are your thoughts?
And water access is just so difficult along our coast. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, we could kind of go to a lot of different places. You know, I could get to the backside of West Bay, go on Galveston Island, go to the backside and slip over there. And it was really, you know, we were crossing private property, but nobody cared back then.
Yeah.
And now everything's fenced off and posted off. And, you can just start looking at the maps, of course. Matagorda Island over there in Matagorda, you can go across over there. You got to find places where you can drive right pretty close to the water and get out and go in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's quite a few places over there. I used to do it all the time. And that's not all private property. So there's some old oil field roads and stuff that, that cut through the island and go right out to the bay. And I've had some really good days doing that. Port O'Connor is difficult because we've got the intercoastal.
Right. You know,
that's the same thing with Aransas Pass and Rockport and places like that. A whole lot of it where you want to go, that's why kayaks are so popular.
Yeah.
If you get a hold of a kayak, that opens up so much more water for him. Being able to just cut across the intercoastal, even stopping on the other side of it, and now you're in good. Like right here by me at Charlie's. You know, there's some fantastic fishing that's 400 or 500 yards from Charlie's.
Yeah.
But there's an intercoastal in the way.
Yeah, that's a tough swim with your gear.
Yeah, I mean, get you an inner tube and kind of float across. And then you could go wading all you want. But that's the most difficult part of answering his question.
Google Earth is your friend.
Yeah, and that's your best bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the upper parts of the bays you can walk into. Again, we used to walk in private property over Eagle Point. We could walk between the houses and walk out between the piers and just start wading.
Yeah,
I don't know that that's an option anymore. I mean, I hadn't done it in forever. Mm-hmm. When I was in college, that was one of my problems with college.
Fishing.
I would be driving down Edgebrook there, and I'd hit 45, and I was going to U of H. And, take a right to go to U of H or take a left to go to Galveston.
Well, that's an easy decision for you, not your parents.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I looked up and the weather was nice and the wind wasn't blowing, I tended to make that left-hand turn. I kept fishing stuff in the trunk of my old Nova, and I found myself wade fishing quite often when I should have been in class.
Yeah.
But like I said, we had so many more options back then for getting in the water. There's a couple of books out that Ray Crawford wrote years ago on kayak fishing access points. I can't remember the exact name of his book. I'm sorry, Ray, if you're listening. And Ray's still around. He's over in Mississippi now. But he spent months and months and months just going up and down the coast and driving every little back road that he could find and seeing where their access was. Mm-hmm. It's also a good thing for accessing for wade fishing. If you can find one of his old books, just a little, you know, softback book, mm-hmm. but it's full of really good information. He went with guides that he came out with me several different times. We rode around all around Galveston Bay and looked at different places where he could bring a kayak and put in. And then I took him to some fishing areas nearby and showed him stuff. So he wrote a really informative, good book. And then he wrote one for the Middle Coast, I believe. And I don't know if he ever got to the South, you know, the lower end of the coast.
Yeah.
I know he had the Upper Coast and the Middle Coast covered.
I will say this, as much as, you know, back in the old days, you know, I was with you, I'm with you in the spirit of, you used to be able to have so much more access, not as much development in some of these places. And you could just kind of walk across a little field or a little path or something and get in there and start waiting. That's not the case so much. A lot of people, you're either reluctant or you're told no, if you ask about cutting through someone's yard to get to a bay. But the one good thing, the one good development in the last, couple of decades that you just touched on. And I was thinking about Rockport, specifically Copano Bay. If I can find a kayak launch, and there's, you know, they're all over, there's maps of them, kayak launch here, kayak launch there, outside of some that, you know, like you mentioned, have to go across a deeper body of water, you generally, that's public access in a kayak launch. Sure, if you have a kayak, awesome. But even if you don't, you can kind of go through that as a wading launch point and wade as much as you want. Without bothering anybody. I mean, it's encouraged. That's where you're supposed to get into the water. I'm thinking of a place right now. I did that, as I said, a few times in Copano, some places in Port Aransas. If you have a kayak launch, you can pretty much wade in, have your gear, have all your, you know, everything you need in a dry satchel around your neck or whatever. But I'm thinking of a place in Matagorda that you can get into that whole west side of East Matagorda Bay via a kayak launch, and you can wade as much as you want. So there are options like that, and that's what I would recommend.
Yeah, I just sat here and looked it up while you're talking. It's wade and kayak fishing the coastal bend of Texas.
Yeah.
And then he's got another one for the upper coast. And like I said, the author is Ray Crawford. I just found it on Amazon. Found it on Abe Books. There's quite a few. I don't think it's in print anymore, but there's quite a few copies out there floating around.
Yeah.
The other one is Wade and Kayak Fishing Galveston Bays. If you can find either one of those for your area, they're gold.
Yeah. They are absolutely are. Okay, so this is resonating with me a little bit, because now that I'm kind of transitioning to my new boat, you know, you always go into your fishing gear on your boat, you clean everything up, you know, it kind of helps you get reorganized, so to speak. And we got a question from a listener who says, just getting started fishing. What should I have in my tackle box? What are the musts? You know, what artificials should a rookie put in there in the tackle box to get started? What other things should I have in my box or my bag or whatever it may be? And I'm thinking, you know, this is something that you can almost expand a little bit, Scott, for purposes like you're hopping on someone else's boat. You know, you don't have your big stuff on your boat or at your house or whatever. You know, what are the musts that, and I've got a couple of thoughts, but I always want to start with you. What are the musts for your tackle box, especially for newbies, but not just for newbies?
Yeah, you just walked into my garage the other day.
Oh my goodness. Let's stop and talk about that a little bit, because like just last week. So I went by Scott's place because as I mentioned, the weigh-in for that Freedom Boats tournament was in Port O'Connor. I said, hey man, I want to come by, brought you some of my OG sauce, brought you a couple of other little goodies that I hadn't seen you know, so I wanted to get to you. And so we're walking around your property. It's awesome. I'm looking at everything. We get on your little, is it a Can-Am? We drive around looking at everything cool, you know, Lake Knoll and all that. And then we get into your garage or your store, your shop there. And I'm like, good gravy. I've got a lot of stuff. I mean, I've got more stuff than I could ever use in terms of some gear, but you weren't lying about those fly fishing rods. And you sure weren't lying about some of those tackle boxes and the baits that you have.
Yeah. I've got way too much. I mean, when it really comes right down to it, it's, I got way more than I need.
You think?
So,
okay. So let's do the Scott Null test here. You're putting together a bag or a box.
Yep.
You're going to hop on my boat. You're going to hop on my boat for, let's say, a 2-day trip. We're going on a 2-day trip in East Matagorda. What are you doing?
I'm going to grab a lot of my DOA stuff, of course. I'm going to get some paddle tails. I'm going to have a light color, a dark color. We'll have some with chartreuse tails, some without. That's my go-to. I'm going to have some little DOA shrimp for sight casting to school and fish. With the paddle tails, I'm going to have some 1/16th and 1/8th ounce, the little slider jig heads, mm-hmm. you know, the swim bait jig heads that I like, with the weight on the hook and a little spring in the front. I'm going to have some top waters. They're going to be, again, DOA, the PT7s. I'm going to have some of those, and then I'm going to have some air lures. I probably pick, you know, a couple of different sizes, you know, pick a real big one, you know, pick the full top dog and then a top pup or something yeah. along those lines. I'm not going to go crazy because I don't want to overpack, you know, mm-hmm. for then probably going to have a couple of subsurface. I'm just not real big on that. If I'm going to go subsurface, I'm going to throw the paddle tail most of the time.
Yeah.
Now if it depending on time of year too, you know, if we're going to be there and it's winter time and or fall and we're going to just wade for big trout, I'm going to switch that up. I'm going to have some subsurface.
Yeah. What you're targeting matters.
Right. And like most of my targeting is generally redfish.
Mm-hmm.
And so that right there, and then a gold spoon, you know, I'm going to have to throw a couple of gold spoons in there. That's my little quick go-to bag, you mm-hmm. know, for taking out. I do it all the time going down fish with Dean, been out fish with Caleb, and I've got a little backpack thing that I throw a box together and throw it in that backpack. And then I've got my pliers, got it, my sunglasses, an extra pair of sunglasses.
Yep.
Some leader line. And because not everybody
bingo that was the one thing I was going to add, line and leader line, regular yeah. fishing line. We all have our favorites. I'm the braid guy from Cass King, and it's really great line and it's cheap. That they don't pay me to say that, which I want to get to that in a second, by the way. And it's online. I like that line. I like the moss green. I always put some line either in my bag or somewhere, and along with leader line too, because it's what you like. You know, all those lures, I couldn't agree more. But that's something that a lot of people forget. You're going to get tangled up more than likely at some point.
Yeah. And the other part would be I'd bring two rods and reels.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
That's, yeah. You want to have one with a backup. Mm-hmm. And so I probably wouldn't bring the line necessarily. In fact, I don't, but I do always have a spare. And there's been times when I've gone down and I'm looking at the weather ahead of time and it's pretty dadgum windy. I know that I'm going to have a professional overrunner.
Exactly.
And so I might take a reel off of one of my other rods and just throw it in that backpack.
And flip, just rather than have the line, just flip the reel.
Yeah, just switch reels.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty much it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to get real carried away, you know, if I'm running a quick trip like that.
Yeah.
The reason I got so much that you saw, I pulled everything out of the boats.
Well, it's decades too.
Yeah, well, since I'm down right now and I wanted to clean things up and and go through and reorganize all my stuff. What you saw was what I pulled out of both of my boats.
And that's a lot
of tables.
It made me think I need to buy some more stuff.
But I can do that because I've got room on the boat to do it.
Yeah.
Now, when I kayak fished, I didn't carry near them. I carried basically what we were just talking about for a week, you know, for a 2-day trip.
Yeah.
That's what I carried. Kayak fishing, wade fishing, I carried even less.
Mm-hmm.
But on the boat, I mean, it just lives on the boat. It doesn't go back and forth. It's not something I have to carry around, put on the boat and take it off and all that.
Yeah.
It's a permanent fixture in there. So I tend to carry an excess in there. Mainly because you get out there, you got customers, and all of a sudden, you know, one
this happens, and you want to use this specific thing, and then, so you'll have plenty of it.
Yep. And then I've got to have a backup, and I've got to have one for everybody, and then I got to have backup for everybody. So then it starts getting into a whole lot of tackle.
Yeah.
Real quick.
Like my room, my
situation.
Yeah, my little shed is pretty full right now down in Sargent because I took everything out of my boat, and that it's kind of a reminder for all of us to kind of go in there, whether it's you get your boat, you know, serviced, you know, you're out of pocket for a minute, like you are, you're changing to a new boat, like I am, whatever it may be, get that stuff out of there, get it all cleaned. I use the time to change the hooks on some of my corkies. Oh, by the way, you didn't mention that. I would have a corky or two, in my bag, you know, change the hooks to single hooks rather than treble hooks, stuff like that. Get everything cleaned up. And while we're on the topic of actual product here, our listeners, I think, trust us enough and they know us by now enough to know, you know, when I say this, but if you haven't, if you're new to the podcast, everything that you and I talk about, we use, we trust, the vast majority of that stuff I'm buying, you're buying, sure. We have some partners that whatever, give us, you know, some equipment at either a discount or whatever. We all were shopping at Fishing Tackle Unlimited before they became a partner with the podcast. I've been throwing Deadly Dudleys for 15 years. That's my soft plastic go-to. By the way, side note, I was talking to Paul Falgu from Deadly Dudley. So put a pin in this. He wants to auction. I was getting some stuff done at Anglers Anonymous, and he wants to auction a golf outing for two with him and myself via Anglers Anonymous. We'll get you some more details on that. So he's a good golfer. I'm not, but we'll have fun. So Deadly wants to do that. Just another cool thing that friends of ours are doing because they listen to the podcast as well. And I know I want to ask you something about that top water that I'm really excited to try that you used, you have used for years, but I do want to say, you know, Knock and Tail lures, they're, you know, they're part of the Bite Me podcast as well. Like that, I use those lures, you know, I use those plastics, the Knock and Tail. And so just so people know, you know, yeah, we're happy to take advertisement, but it has to be a product that we like, a product that we use, and a product that we trust, and that we can tell our listeners, you can use this, you can trust it. Et cetera. You know, I mean, if you want to talk about advertising on this podcast, it's very, very cheap. You can hit me up or Scott up and we'll go from there, but it's got to be products that, that we trust. So what is that top water? I can't wait to use it. I've seen you use it. I love it. It's just the right size. You can launch it like crazy. It's a soft top water, a single hook, which I love, and it catches fish.
Yeah, it's one big single hook, and it it looks like it's about it's a little bit shorter probably than a
about 2.5 inches long, 3 inches maybe.
Yeah, it's probably a little longer than that. Mm-hmm. But it, I mean, it looks like all the other top waters as far as the shape of it, mm-hmm. Like a little Spook Junior.
Yeah,
it's about that size, but a little shorter than a Spook Junior. It's weighted. It's got a rattle in it, and it's soft plastic, and you can throw that thing into the weediest, yep. nastiest stuff that you.
That's
can
why find. I want to use it.
I've used it bass fishing and thrown it into standing timber, you know, mm-hmm. thick stuff.
What is it? What's it called?
It's a PT7. It's from it's a DOA lure.
Mm-hmm.
They worked on it for years. I was always talking to Mark about it. He said, man, I almost got it. Almost got it. And that's where the 7 came from. And it was from
that was the seventh try
generation of it. Yeah. Before he got it to where he felt like he could put it out there for the public. Mark's a perfectionist.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to sell it until he was right.
Yeah.
The PT is what everybody always wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're not talking about that.
It's
we're not talking about that.
No, you can go. You ask Mark about it. He says, yeah, he says it's poodle turd.
Yeah.
I got to stop. What? If you know Mark, I mean, it fits. It's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the way he is. He's down to earth guy. He's funny. And he says, yeah, it looks like, you know, you drop on the floor. It looked like it might be a poodle turd.
Could be. Could be. No question about it. Well, I've just been,
that's where the name for it came from.
I've just been going into those back lakes so much, you know, since I've gotten back to East Matagorda. I'm like, man, this is perfect for, you know, just getting literally between blades of grass or, you know, reeds of grass and just start popping that sucker.
Well, if you accidentally throw it too far, you saw me do that in Matagorda when me and you and Caleb were out.
Yeah.
I threw it too far and threw it up into the grass, into the cord grass.
Mm-hmm.
You can chunk it up in there and just pull it right out.
No worries.
Nothing hangs up. It'll go through anything.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic lure.
Well, I'll be the judge of that. But from everything I've seen, it is.
Yeah, I've caught bass, reds. Well, you saw me catch a nice red on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trout. Yeah. You know, anything that eats the top water will eat it.
Yeah.
Really.
And, you know, obviously, you know, the other thing that people ask me a lot about, we're going to hear from him in just a bit, but a couple of my buddies over at Wade Ride, do you really use that? Yeah, I really use that. And I want to, that's a good transition to Chandelier Islands, which here I am fishing for practically, you know, 50 years, if not more, my whole life. I've never cast a line in the Chandelier Islands. And I know you think I'm a big dummy for not having done that. You've got some buddies down there, but we were asked about the way I put it is the mythical lure of the Chandelier Islands. It is mythical. My sons have been, I haven't. You know, it's an adventure. You know, you're getting on a big boat and then you're going to a mothership, if you will, and you're going to have your little skiffs or whatever it may be to get into the Chandelier Islands. The phenomenon of it is incredible. The fishing can be incredible as well. What is it about that, Scott?
It's kind of like the West used to be, you know, I mean, it's the frontier, you know, it's out there. Nobody lives there. You know, it's out on the outer edge of, you know, it's hard to believe when you go out there that there's trout and redfish there because
it looks like you're in the middle of.
Yeah. I mean, you're way the heck out in the middle of the Gulf. It feels like, but you look on a map, it's really not that far out. If you came from the Louisiana marsh, which there's some guys that do that. They run in their own little private boats.
Yeah.
Run out there like that. For
what's the run?
Trip. I don't remember how far that run is going that way. But when we go with Captain Troy, we leave out of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually in Louisiana waters. The actual state line is we cross it in his boat. But we'll leave just after dark. He's docked right by a casino, so we usually get there early, load the boat, you know, put our stuff on there.
Load yourselves.
And then go into the casino for a little while and hang out. Some of the guys sit on the dock and just BS, and we get on the boat. Everybody goes to sleep, and you wake up, you're in the chandeliers.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool when you fall asleep, you're on the Mississippi coast, and you wake up, you're out in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico with a little island. It's just a spit of sand, man. It's not much.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a big island at all. I've read the history on it. I wrote a couple articles about it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bigger place back in the day. They raised crops out there, and they had cattle on it. And it was people that actually lived on this little island.
Good gravy. It's
just amazing to me. I can't imagine living out there.
Yeah, you can.
I could, yeah. Rudy Grigger did, the plugger. You know, that was kind of like his last frontier, you know. Mm-hmm. He was always about pushing the boundaries. If you read his book, The Plugger,
mm-hmm.
He kept pushing different places in Texas. They kept getting further and further away from people and found good fishing. You know, he was an explorer. And then he ended up out there, and he had a houseboat out there for a long time. That's when I first became aware of it, when I was working at Marburgers as a kid.
Yeah.
Mr. Marburger and them, they'd fly out there on a float plane, and they'd fly the beach. They'd locate these big, huge schools of fish by flying over them, then turn around, land the float plane, park it on the beach, get out and wade fish.
Yeah.
And back then, you know, no limits, no nothing. The stringers that they had out there were just things of legend, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
my mouth would drop when they come back. They'd show me all the pictures. It's like, oh my god,
yeah,
you know, it's just unbelievable. It took me a long time to work it out, but I finally got out there, and I got hooked in with Troy, and I've been out there six times now, I guess six,
mm-hmm.
seven times.
Mm-hmm.
It's always different. The fishing's always, you know, there's always. We park at different points up and down. It's a long island. It's not real wide, but it's long.
Yeah.
And Troy parks you in the area that's been producing. And I've done trips where we brought our kayaks, and Troy wrote and let us load those on the boat. And then we mm-hmm. went into the marshy areas and just hammered on redfish. And other trips, we drifted on the grass flats.
Yeah.
And it went really well. Then there's been times when the surf was turned on, and go out there in the surf. I was standing on the sand, sight casting with a fly rod to bull reds that were in the first gut.
Golly.
And that's where I caught my biggest trout ever on a fly rod. It was a little 27, 28 inch trout.
Is part of the, you know, I talk about the mythical lure, but is part of the phenomenon? I don't know this answer. I'm not saying that this is what I think. I'm asking, those fish are just perennial. They're perennial fish there, or do they come in, or what works with that?
I think they live there.
Yeah.
You know, they just live their whole lives out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool part of it is you're out there, and it reminds me of when I was younger fishing the Texas coast and pushing down, you know, going to Mansfield or somewhere like that, and not seeing anybody all day, seeing one other boat, seeing two other boats. Or the other boats that you saw were guys that were with you.
Yeah.
That had come with you. That's my biggest allure to it. Now you talk to somebody like Rudy, you know, Rudy, if he's still alive, he'd say, it's all crowded now.
Yeah.
You know, but they're.
It's all in context. It's got to be in context.
There's three or four of these motherships that go down there, but they tend to park a long ways apart.
Yeah.
And then you're on these little 14 foot skiffs, a little 15 horse motor.
Mm-hmm.
And you get in that, and two guys get in it, and you take off for the day, and then you come back for lunch, and you come back for dinner, spend the night, do it again.
Yeah.
With those small boats and them parking the motherships far enough apart, I've never run across another guy from mm-hmm. another boat.
Mm-hmm.
And we fished a long way. I mean, we fished where we just about couldn't see the boat anymore.
Yeah.
And never had any kind of inkling of being crowded.
Yeah.
And that's what gets me about it. And that's what gets me excited about going out there, is I know I can fish however I want to fish and not get run over.
Yeah. Sounds like Bite Me needs to have a little group outing.
I've talked to Troy about that.
Now, look at you. What do you say? I'm in.
He was booked up this year. I wanted to try to do it this year. Of course, now once my wing got busted,
then
that was kind of out anyway, but he's doing makeup trips right now. Mm-hmm.
For COVID.
He got mm-hmm. shut down. I mean, they completely shut him down.
Yeah.
So this year has been about makeup trips. Next year, he'll probably have some openings. And
sounds like another plan.
I would like to set some listeners for next year and get us a little group. We'll make a trip out of it.
We can let Caleb drive the mothership. We're right up in the marsh.
Yeah, I don't know if Troy would be up for that.
Well, it's funny because I got invited this year to go with Jason and Tim from Wade Wright. But those dastardly Texans are going to be playing that week, and I have to do it with my regular day job. But let's check in real quick with Jason on some of the things that he's talking about that you just mentioned. So back here with the Wade Wright guys, my buddies Jason and Tim, Jason Law and Tim Stamps. And Jason, I made the mistake of having to cover the Houston Texans during the annual trip to the Chandelier Islands, and you guys are going to go crush them. One thing about Chandelier, and I've said this on the podcast, which I'm kind of embarrassed to say, I've never fished there, ever, ever, ever. And it has a mythical kind of aura about it, especially for me, because I see all these guys, yourselves included, going down there and having a great time. My son has gone. Both my sons have gone and come back. And, Dad, you got to go. Dad, you got to go. What is it about the Chandelier Islands that makes it, that gives it that kind of that mythical feel to it all?
Well, John, there's a couple of different things. Number one is the cell phones don't work at all. That is just, you get peace and quiet. You're out there. There's a few other motherships. Everybody has two-man skiffs, so you just kind of divide up. And you can run somewhere and not see another boat all day. Right. You've got the whole place to yourself, and you can try different things. I mean, it's top waters. It's soft plastics. You can, some people even throw popping corks. You've got the surf on one side, and then kind of a bay. It's kind of funny to think that there's a bay area 40 miles off the coast that you can wade fish. But it just, the surrealness, the quiet, and just being out there and not being bothered by anybody other than the rest of the guys that are with you. Yeah. But it's a great trip, and it's something that we've really enjoyed doing every year, and we'll continue to.
And what are the particulars? Like not just, you know, that what separates it, but like if a lot of our listeners have, and we have a lot of guide friends, Scott's going to mention a couple here in a minute, that have, you know, have businesses in the Chandelier Islands. What is a typical day for you? Take the mothership out, you get on your skiffs, you get out there, and you're pretty much on your own after that. And that's part of the solitude, right?
Yes, John. So we get on the boat on Sunday morning. And our Sunday afternoon, excuse me, and they take us out. And when we wake up, pretty much usually it's around midnight, we end up getting out there. But by the time then, most of us have already had our adult beverages and gone to bed. But we get up the next morning, and they cook a great breakfast for you. And the hospitality is great on all the boats out there. And they just divide you up in two-man teams, throw you in a skiff, and you throw your gear in it, and good luck. I mean, they'll pull out a map and show you the island. The problem is the island's been hit by, what, 4 hurricanes in the last 6 years? So it's different every time you go. There's no accurate maps. There's no Google Maps. So you get to just start fresh and figure it all out and explore it all and figure out where you can find that's different from what you knew the year you were previously there. But then you come in and you fish for the first 4 to 5 hours till you ever get tired. Come in, they'll cook lunch for you, and then back out for an evening fish, and you fish till dark. I will say they do not like it if you stay out after dark. I got in trouble for staying out past dark, but I think I caught 13 redfish. I was fishing by myself last year, and I caught 13 redfish in the last 15 minutes of light, and I was getting cussed out by the captain for being out there in the dark with no light.
And make sure you don't get in those 3 and 4 foot swells like Tim did at one point. That would be an issue. And make sure you take your Wade Wright belt. I'm a big fan of the sling when I'm doing what you're talking about, either on my little John boat that I have, you know, or out wading. What do you usually take? And tell me, because we always get questions about it, and I know you guys, the Bite Me combo.
So when I go to Chandelier, I take my full Wade Wright Extreme combo setup because I'm going to carry 2 rods. Mm-hmm. We're going to beach the boat somewhere, anchor them up, and then we're going to put boots on the ground trying to scout out the areas and figure out where those troughs are, drains, and those kind of things, the cutouts from where the hurricane washed through the island that's just changed things. So we've got to get out there and being doing that, having that second rod, being able to have that top water on one, soft plastic on the other, there's really no retying. You just keep fishing the whole time and have a lot of fun doing it. And so that's a typical setup. I mean, I will take my sling and use it, but you know, mostly it's for me out there in that type of scenario. It's going to be the Wade Ride Extreme combo all the way. So the Bite Me Special is a 9-item combo that comes with everything that's in our Extreme combo, which is the Wade Ride itself, the small tackle box, the large tackle box, the front rod tube, and the back support. Then we also throw in a stringer wrap and a stringer holder, and that can be affixed to the belt. And we throw in a wade net and the strap to the Madre sling, which can be used on the large box from the Extreme combo. So those 9 items come in the Bite Me combo. And if you enter that Bite Me 20 code in on our website, it'll give you 20% off for all the Bite Me listeners.
Awesome. You heard the man, Jason Law with Wade Ride, CoastalFishingGear.com. They will take care of you. Back to the podcast. All right, Scotty, it's good. We gotta do something. I mean, my whole life, me of all people who lives for this stuff, has never been to, I've been to Alaska. That was on my list. But I haven't been to Chandelier. I've fished in, let me see where I've fished, just because of my previous life as a columnist at the Chronicle. I was traveling all over the world. I fished in Argentina. I fished in Australia. I fished in Japan. I've fished, obviously, like I said, in Alaska. I used to carry a little portable rod when I was in California, so I could maybe catch some rainbow trout up in Northern California. But I haven't fished in Chandelier. What the hell's the matter with me? We'll get that going. It's a lot closer and a lot cheaper. That's for sure. So we'll get that going. That's a little homework assignment that we'll have. All right, another couple of quick good questions.
We need to circle back. The long question about, you know, walking in.
Oh yeah,
had a back end on it about sunglasses, and we just
completely
forgot. Man,
I'm glad you checked my homework there. Glad you checked my work. Yes, hit. No, this is important because I teased it, and I don't want to leave our listeners hanging. So I about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I finally had enough of readers falling off. You know, and I got my sunglasses and take those off, put my readers on, and they get sweaty, and it was the only thing I needed them for was the close up stuff. So I had the LASIK surgery. This isn't a problem for me, but I can definitely relate. Some people have prescription sunglasses, prescription glasses, and want them sunglasses. You've talked about this with me, and I don't know if it was on the air or not, but there are options out there for guys, ladies that need that, you know, and the sunglass part of it.
Yeah, a lot of sunglass companies will do prescriptions. Costa is really good with it. They have a whole entire different group. I mean, you know, I was a sales rep for Costa for a long time, but we'd go to the meeting and we were in a big banquet hall, and one whole side of the banquet hall was RX. Mm-hmm. And there was a prescription sunglass guy that worked my same territory, and we didn't overlap. He worked with nothing but optometrists.
Mm-hmm.
Go in there. So there is, on the website, there's a button up at the top that says RX, and you can go on that and click, and it will take you to the authorized Costa optometrist offices. There's a bunch of them out there that will put different lenses, you know, they'll put sunglass lenses in your mm-hmm. Costa frames if you've got them, but it's not Costa glasses.
It makes a big difference.
It's a big difference. It's huge. When you go to a authorized dealer, then it goes directly to Costa. And they have I've walked the facility, and I mean, it's amazing to me that they've got that level of technology sitting there in their office. But they can, it's a full optometrist office, and you can cost you extra. You know, it costs a good bit extra to get it done, but you can get it done. If it's just readers, like what your problem was, Costa also has the Seamates. They have an entire line that has readers, you know, just a little cheater on the bottom of regular sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they're plastic lenses, which I prefer glass over the plastic. But I've gotten a few pair of them, and I tend to scratch them. I'm kind of rough with things.
But, especially yourself.
Yeah, myself, gear and everything. But if that's all that it is that you need, you can walk into Fish Tackle Unlimited and buy Seamates.
Yeah.
If you've got you know, real prescription that you need done, then you need to go to one of the authorized dealers and get real COSTA classes.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing a lot of people, when you have a prescription, they think it's a really, you know, long and arduous, you know, kind of a process. It's really not. If it's anything like everything else that COSTA does, and a lot of these companies, but you know, we're fans of that, it can be done relatively easy, right? You say you just click on the right side.
Yeah, click on there, and it'll, like I said, it'll put you to an optometrist that's close to you.
Mm-hmm.
Go in there.
Do they send their lenses, or what do they do?
Yeah, they. It's all done in house at COSTA.
Mm-hmm.
So they send it off and they mail it to you.
Yeah.
Pretty simple.
That's pretty sweet. All right. Now, real quick one that I definitely wanted to get to this week, just because I meant to last week as well. And you know how these topics are, and I love it. You know, people just stacking up questions and topics for us, and that's what we're here for. The topic is small bay, big trout. So let me actually read this question. Grew up fishing Bastrop Bayou Bay Area and still do. It's quite different from Matagorda in the sense that Matagorda's bays are much larger and the south shorelines of east and west have tons of drains and various bottoms. He's talking about a small body of water. My area has a few defined drains, a lot of shell, almost completely all mud bottom. How do I target, you know, trout? He was saying big trout too. How do I target big trout in smaller bodies of water, such as Bastrop Bay, Oyster Lake, where there aren't a lot of obvious signs, basically, is what he's saying. A lot of drains and no seagrass to speak of. And then he said the only successful method I had is finding the deeper holes and ledges, shell humps and stuff. I'm guessing he's on the right path there, at least what I would be doing on a smaller body of water like that. But what else are your thoughts?
Yeah, shell.
Yeah.
Those small bays, you know, if they get a lot of pressure, you want to go to where there's less pressure. And I'm familiar with Oyster Lake and Bastrop. There's a lot of shell in there. I mean, just tons of it. And almost to the point that there's areas of it that a lot of people consider no go. You know, they won't even go in there mm-hmm. because there is so much. You got to find those out of the way places. Watch that bay. If you fish it often enough, you know where everybody runs. You know where everybody fishes. Those big fish aren't going to be there.
Yep.
They're going to seek out quieter places. And that's probably the biggest clue that I can give is to go hunt in places where you don't see a whole lot of traffic. You're not looking to catch a bunch of fish if you're doing that. You're looking for that one or two good bite, big bite.
Yeah.
So the popular places tend to hold a lot of fish and, you know, a lot of schoolies and a lot of, you know, keeper size trout. And that's what you're looking for when you're doing that. Think different. You know, it's like the same thing with deer hunting. You know, anything where you're looking for the biggest and the baddest, you got to go where there's not a lot of traffic and where they're not getting spooked. Those mm-hmm. fish got big for a reason. And
right.
They managed to live this long for a reason. The big old buck, a lot of times they're hanging out not too far from the camp house because everybody goes out and hunts all over the ranch.
And they're eating your sandwiches.
Yeah. And they're hanging out not too far from the house because, hell, nobody hunts there.
Yeah.
You know? I've seen that happen several times on ranches. So I kind of relate a lot of things to deer hunting.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of them. You know, deer hunting's about habitat.
Yeah.
Our fishing is about habitat.
Big trout for me, I always go back to my predatory example. Trout, you have to think of them like tigers. They have those snaggle tooths in front, just like a tiger for a reason. They hide in either the drains or the cover or the mud, the darker water. It's why I always like to fish, you know, streaks, which people know on this podcast. If you've been listening for any amount of time, I'm a big fan of the streaks. Yeah, they come out of the mud. So what I'm getting to here, if I were fishing there is and looking for a big trout, is a color change maybe near the shoreline. You know, maybe something where there's a long line of, you know, dirty water, dirty-ish water to something a little better. Those big trout are kind of going to be roaming. They're much more of a loner. You know, they're not a completely loner. There's usually a couple here and there, but they're not in a school. And they're going to be kind of roaming, looking for a place to pounce, like a tiger in the forest, you know, in the reeds or whatever, comes out and pounces when it sees its prey. That's what trout do. And that's what I would do. I would be very, very patient. Long wade, probably, obviously, if you can, mix of shell and mud, especially along the mix of shell and mud, and just make that long wade, maybe where, you know, the trout are going to be kind of, you know, predatory, was what I would be saying.
And problem with wading over there is a lot of mud.
That's what I'm saying, if you can.
A lot of shell.
Yeah.
It's a good polling place. Mm-hmm. You know, great for polling skiffs. It's a good place to drift and do the dropping your power pole, you know, and fishing it out. One of the biggest trout I've ever seen in Galveston was in a situation like that. It wasn't in Bastrop, but it was nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bayou that went up into the marsh, and where it went out, it had like a delta with a bunch of little islands,
right,
and then these little channels that fed out of it. And where one of the channels fed out into an open lake, it was deep in that channel, and then it fanned out amongst oysters. And there was little crevices in between, you know, little pathways. And on an incoming tide, I was easing in there to go poling it, looking for redfish. And I was kind of trying to pick my way through those oysters. And I looked over and lay in between two oyster beds facing into the current. Tide was coming in.
Yeah.
That little lake was one of the biggest trout I've ever seen in my life, laying in about 8 inches of water.
Mm-hmm.
And she was laying there facing into it. I tried to act like I didn't see her.
Sneak up on her.
And then tried to come around from behind it and then make another cast, and it just didn't work out. She wasn't there anymore.
Right.
But it kind of learned me a little lesson, you know, make a few casts before I go into a place like that. You know, I was more concerned about getting through the oysters is more than what was in the oysters.
Right.
And I knew those oysters were there. I knew those little cuts were there. I just failed to make any casts beforehand,
which
I should have. And I may have popped that big old trout.
She was there, you go. There was your 30. There was your 30
she
right
was
there.
Over 30. Yeah, she was easily over 30, but just laying there.
Yeah.
Looked like a log laying between two oyster reefs.
That's all. That had to have been worth it just right that, just being able to see that sight. No question about it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to do what would Scott do this weekend, because I'm looking at the forecast as we're talking. 80% chance of thunderstorms Thursday, 75% chance of thunderstorms Friday, 88% chance of thunderstorms Saturday. So I don't know what Scott's going to do this weekend, but John's probably going to hit that shed again and then do some more cleaning and hook changing and just getting stuff ready, because it's going to be a tough go here. Anybody who, if you have any thoughts for anybody who does want to go, besides stay dry and be careful, what would you tell them?
They're really scattered out. You know, I was watching that same thing and seeing all those high percentages.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, man, we're just going to get socked in this week and
kind
of making plans to be in the garage and work. And then I watched one of the local weather guys and he said, you know, yeah, the percentages are high, but they're going to be widely scattered.
Yeah.
So you could maybe work your way around them.
Find a window.
Get your little windows and watch your phone, you know, watch the radar and pick and choose, you know, which direction you go based on which way those little storms are moving.
Yeah.
Don't push it. Don't get out there and get hit by lightning. But I fish through a lot of days like that where you bounce around and you, know, you watch that one coming and you move over a mile and a half and it goes by you and then you can go back to where you were. The winds look pretty good. It's kind of windy during the week, but it's all southeast.
Yeah.
So everything should be good and clear. You know, the beachfront should be okay. Shouldn't be terrible. As far as color wise, it'd be a little rough, a little bumpy. A buddy of mine was out there today and he said, yeah, it's a little bumpy.
Yeah. A little sporty.
He was hunting tarpon and he had a picture and it looked a little choppy out there.
Anytime anybody tells me, yeah, it was a little sporty, I know it was hellacious.
Yeah, it was rough. But by the weekend, it's supposed to drop down below 10 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Saturday.
Hey, Sunday might be good.
It looks pretty good. Down. Yeah. Saturday and Sunday look good. I mean, I'm looking at some ones and twos.
Yeah.
In miles per hour.
That's good.
Yeah. That's really nice.
Well, Gibson says hello, by the way. we'll go from there. Listen, man, this was a fun one. Next week we'll get you in again. Maybe even some other guests. I need to get in some of the guys from CCA. They've got some big stuff, obviously, with the Star Tournament wrapped up and some of the things that they're doing.
Sometime, I mean, they're releasing just millions of fish.
I passed a fish truck this past weekend down there.
Yeah, I mean, they're in overdrive.
Yeah,
it's amazing what they've done. They've ramped it up, and they are putting fish all over, trout and rip.
That's what I want to get. So we'll put that on there. And anybody who wants to send us a question, comment, topic, suggestion, just go to the group page, Facebook, search Bite Me Fishing, Bite Me Texas Saltwater Fishing, whatever it may be on Facebook. Scott, bang up job, man. Everything is going to be good. It has been some really good fishing. It's going to be ramping up even more so. Certainly don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, as I mentioned, wherever you get your podcast. Any parting shots before we get out of here? Heroes on the Water.
Nothing. Then get signed up on that Heroes on the Water tournament. It's real easy. Just go to heroesonthewater.org and it'll direct you over there and you can get into it.
Yeah.
Get in there and see if you can win you a little something.
Yeah. And how about that?
There's four regions and seven divisions. Quite a few of three of the different regions have freshwater and saltwater. So our southern region, obviously, even if you don't, if you're inland and you're listening to this up in Dallas, you've got a freshwater division.
There you go. Or our friends in Alberta, Canada, can see where they can go too. All right, guys, y'all have a good one. Be sure to be careful this week with storms. Find that window, but don't push it. We'll be back here next Wednesday posting again. Until then, tight lines, catch them up, and we will see you then.